weekend to remember in college basketball, the first weekend in the books. 16 teams left standing as we charge towards the Final Four in Phoenix. Kevin and Brad, as always, bringing it to you on the CBB Central pod. Appreciate you all joining us. Obviously, there's plenty of college basketball content this time of year. We appreciate you picking ours over someone else's. Fun weekend. Was in Charlotte covering that site's games. No great games there, but Tennessee-Texas was a good one. Unfortunate for those that had been on BovadaSportsbook.com and bet on the Vols because they just could not make a shot. But at least they found a way to win and advance. The most important thing in March. Kentucky out, Auburn out. Otherwise, a relatively chalky first weekend. We'll break all that down. Plus the carousel, the portal, lots going on. It is funny. I mean, 4 days, Brad, just being completely immersed with games. And then you wake up Monday morning and it is like absolute chaos and like the industry side of college basketball.
I mean, it's exhausting watching all that basketball. I don't think I've slept as well, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. Like sleep until like 10 a.m. like I'm in college again. Anyway, the one thing I want to harp on first is the people trying to make the conference conclusions based on the NCAA tournament, which is normally not a good idea. Right? It's usually the NCAA tournament is not illustrative of the full season in terms of praising or dinging certain conferences. But what I found amusing this year is that literally nothing, there are no takes to be had out of any of the conference results. Like nothing happened crazily in either direction. So, right, so people are just trying to like stop, like the Big East fans are trying to puff out their chest that, UConn won the two games that they were supposed to. And then you get people trying to ding the SEC for losing games, but you could still have Alabama, still in it, and Tennessee, they could be in the Final Four in a couple of days. So the fact that people are trying to jam these narratives down when really no conference did anything that wasn't too expected.
Yeah, look, number one, I think the narrative thing is stupid because, for instance, NC State making the Sweet 16 does not mean anything towards the ACC. Like, even ACC fans were not going to bat for NC State as a tournament team, right?
Same with Clemson.
Right? No one liked them. They just got hot. It happens, right? Yes, it's a good thing for the league that North Carolina and Duke, advanced and get Clemson won, one game. Yes, of course it is. You'd rather that than not. But, NC State went 9-11 in their league, finished with 7 losses in their final 9 games, went from 13-4, 5-1 to 17-14, 9-11. Kevin Keats was essentially fired. And all of a sudden they just go on this rip. It's great. It's cool. It doesn't make the league better. NC State lost by 20 to Ole Miss.
Even find me the ACC fans that were pumping up Clemson before the tournament.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Again, I mean, it's also people are so quick to the narrative, right? It was, the Mountain West is doing terrible, but then Utah State destroys TCU. It's whoops. Realistically, the Mountain West was one Nevada win. Nevada not completely shitting its pants from the Mountain West having a great March. But, the narrative was already decided. I don't know.
And you can't do the besides San Diego State. They're in the league. Like people try to do this all the time with the Jay Wright Villanova teams. Outside of Villanova, no, they're in the league. You can't do a league to league comparison and start lopping off teams from the top to the bottom. There's all these leagues have different number of teams to start with, and if you're gonna lop off San Diego State, then you got to lop off UNC and you got to do that to every league.
Well, the other thing that's really, really annoying is now every league that feels they got disrespected is now using the results is this is why the Big East gets 3 teams to 16. This is why Providence should have made the tournament. This is why Seton Hall should have made the tournament. Like, Brad, you're a Providence fan. Nothing about what Creighton did this week justifies why Providence should be in the tournament, right? If they should have been in the tournament, they should have been in the tournament. It has nothing to do with Creighton being able to beat Oregon.
They should have been in the tournament because they beat Creighton twice, and Creighton was selection committee put them as, what, number 10 overall?
Right. Not because Creighton made the Sweet 16, but I don't know. It is exhausting. It is in general, like, the narratives are...
People were trying to break out NIT records. Like, no one gives a flying fuck. Oh, my God.
It is so ridiculous. Everything about it is so dumb. People just can't enjoy basketball. Like, we spent 4 days watching games. It was a lot of fun. And then, like, you wake up this morning and it's like, well, why do you think the tournament was so chalky?
They're the buzzer beaters.
Right. Well, we also said, it's also so funny. You know, last year, I tweeted this. Last year, how many people did we hear say that the reason for, you know, all the parody and all the upsets was because of the transfer portal?
Of course.
That was the only explanation, was that the portal made it so everyone had the same amount of talent. And so anyone could win, and the era of the blue blood was over. Well, this year, all the blue bloods are good. All the high seeds are still standing. And the justification is, well, NIL and the transfer portal means that all the best players go to the same schools. It's like, all right, people, like, pick a side.
The transfer portal, it almost randomizes it more, where you get your teams that spend big, right, like Villanova, like some of the SEC teams, right? Missouri was one, right, that spent a lot of money, and they don't get it done. Then you have teams that just add a couple random mid-major transfers with a couple average returners, and all of a sudden they're rolling, like Washington State or Northwestern or even like Seton Hall. So that there's no real apparent correlation yet. It's just kind of you get who you can get. Sometimes you hit the jackpot, sometimes you don't. And you look at Dennis Gates and Jerome Tang and all these guys coming off down years now after looking so good last year. It's like you look at the portal, and it's like, I don't know, just get three or four guys and cross your fingers it works.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, yes, you need a really good coach who elevates his talent. You need players who will play hard and play together. You need some level of continuity, and you need to be able to recruit the portal aggressively. But the mix, I mean, who knows? It's really, really hard.
And I texted you that I think going forward, as long as you bring back like three starters and like half of your rotation, I think you got to count that as a running back team. Like, look at Creighton, right? People were kind of worried about Creighton losing Nembhard and Kaluma. And they just kind of elevated Mason Miller. They got Ashworth in, who was a worse player than Nembhard. And it all worked out fine. Right? I mean, Northwestern just adds Langbord, right? And they add that they lose Barron, add Langbord and somebody else, right? And was all fine there pretty much. So I think running it back these days, UConn lost half the rotation. They're still rolling because they just brought back, four guys.
Maryland is the big exception to this rule.
Yeah, maybe they brought back too much. But no, but to what I was saying, I mean, Deshaun Harris-Smith being a freshman maybe, but I don't know. We'll see. Games.
Yes, games. I don't think we need to go kind of game by game. We should go probably region by region. That's probably easier, if nothing else, to coordinate our thoughts. So
how about we start with the Virginia Cavaliers? I feel like people have not got enough Virginia content.
Oh, God. Let's be nice. I will say, I did hit Bovada before that game and make a couple bucks on the under.
I mean, I don't even know what that was.
Well, they're an infectious disease. Every team that plays Virginia can't score the next game.
I I watched them a lot down the stretch, and they were terrible the whole time. But they had that big stretch where they won a ton of games in conference. They had the stretch in the non-league where they, you know, beat what, Florida and Texas A&M. But whatever I watched, it was just squeezing water out of a stone, whatever that analogy is. And it's just McNeely missing jumpers, Rohde missing jumpers, just can't generate any easy offense. Like, you don't think their defense is that good, but then you look up and the other team's only up by 8 to 10 points. It's like it's like 40-30 with ten minutes left.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think I saw Virginia play once this year where I was, like, actually impressed. There were a few times where I thought they played and they looked, you know, they found a way to win. I was like, all right, you know, that means something. The only time I actually watched Virginia, I was like, holy cow, these guys are really good, was when they played Miami. And that was kind of at the start of when everyone was like, oh my God, Miami's awful. Right? Because at that point, Miami was, they entered that game 15-7, 6-5. And so you were like, all right, like, yeah, they lost to Louisville. Yeah, they're probably not that good. But they also don't, like, completely stink.
And the wheels fell off. But how about the Virginia?
They didn't get it, actually.
That's crazy.
That was their final. They lost to Virginia, which is what my mark for Virginia playing well. Yeah, that was it for Miami. They didn't win again.
And I have their teams in the portal.
Oh, yeah. And Kyshawn George is going to go pro. I would not be surprised if Wuga Poplar is in the portal. It's not done yet, but, like, I would not be surprised at all.
I did a complete 180 on Bensley Joseph to Providence. I'm now completely in. I think he's exactly what they need. And I love Michael Nwoko coming out of high school. He's not a fit with the Friars right now, but he'll be a good high major reclamation project.
Yes.
But with Virginia, did you see the athletic director was, like, liking all these tweets about,
yes,
how bad Virginia is. Is Tony Bennett on the hot seat, we think?
He's not on the hot seat. The one thing I will say about Tony Bennett is there was a rumor, and I emphasize that this is a rumor. I do not know if this is true. This is not me reporting anything. But this was something that multiple different college coaches mentioned to me in February, was that Tony Bennett requested that Ron Sanchez be made his head coach in waiting, and that if that did not happen, that he would retire. And Virginia was kind of like, well, we don't really want Ron Sanchez, because that'd be a terrible hire, right? Ron Sanchez is, you know, is a below average coach at Charlotte. But, like, we don't really know we should be, like, chasing Tony out of town.
So did they make Ron Sanchez the coach in waiting?
He is not head coach in waiting as of now. And again, I don't know that Tony will retire. I think there might. I actually think the way that it ended may kind of embolden Tony. Like, all right, I can't go out like this. Like, I gotta. But, like, he is. I guess the point of me sharing that story is, like, I'm not convinced that, like, Virginia is sold on, like, this model being, like, a future thing. Like, the Tony Bennett tree does not have to be a thing.
Which is how it should be at all these places.
Correct. But, look, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there. I do think that they need players. I've seen them connect to a lot of names in the portal, but a lot of, like, bad players. Like, I don't think they have a great pulse for, like, what – like, I think what made Tony – obviously, the pack lines was amazing and whatever, but, like, I truly think what made Virginia so unbelievably good in that time was that they just did not miss on evaluations. Like, every single kid they recruited turned into a really good player. And that stopped. Right?
Yeah.
They've had a lot of misses and a lot of guys who haven't gotten better and a lot of guys who, you know, should have been better than they were.
Well, like, it's like they recruited Jack Salt today. He's going to redshirt and then he's going to be in the portal. You know, he's not sticking around to set screens.
Probably true.
And, you know, with these transfers too, it's less of an evaluation time. You got to move. You got to be aggressive and you got to get them on campus at ASAP so they can differentiate between the 50 schools that reach out to them. Like, the Dante Harris take was completely absurd.
Right. Well, and that's the problem, right? Is, like, their portal class of Rhodey, who's like seemingly not good enough. Dante Harris, who stinks and was like obviously stunk. Jordan Miner, who's like a, you know, mid-major player. And Jacob Groves, who's like a role player who had to be a, you know, one of their best players. Like, that's disastrous. Now you're going to lose Dunn and Beekman. You might lose more than that, right? Like, if they lose Elijah Gertrude to the portal, they're in like trouble, man.
Yeah, and of those four transfers, right? Rhodey looked great on paper. Groves looked fine on paper. Miner, you're like, really? And Dante Harris, you're like, absolutely no way. Like, he lost.
Look, I don't want to belabor the point of Virginia. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for Tony Bennett, but they have some stuff to figure out. Let's get into the bracket, like the main draw. In the East, the narrative was UConn has this impossibly hard draw. They're going to have to play FAU. They're going to have to play Auburn. Well, the coast got cleared for them a bit. Northwestern beat FAU, the shorthanded Northwestern, and then UConn had no troubles there. Auburn obviously got upset by Yale. We'll mention that here in a second. Dan Hurley seems very intent on, like, you know, I think this is all kind of a bit, right? I think he's doing all of this and saying everything he is saying about, you know, how difficult their road is to try to fire up his guys and keep them motivated and whatnot. Keep it kind of us against the world. But, like, this has not been, like, the hardest draw in the world for UConn. Like,
well, it clearly was on paper because Auburn.
Right.
I mean, Auburn losing to Yale was absolutely stunning. I didn't watch a second of Florida-Colorado because I was just locked in on Yale taking it to Auburn.
I kept bouncing back and forth. I kept being like, okay, Auburn's fine. I'll go watch Florida. And then, like, Florida was in trouble. It's like, oh, give us a go back to Auburn. And then the Florida comeback started, and, like, Auburn was still winning. I was like, I guess Auburn's going to be fine. So I watched Florida. And then all of a sudden, I, like, turned the TV back, and it's like, oh, shit, like, Auburn might lose this. So, look, I was a big believer. I think we talked about this last week on the show. Like, I felt like Auburn was, you know, had a really good chance to knock out UConn. And I don't regret picking that. I know I think a lot of times with upsets, you're like, oh, how did I see this? How did I see this coming? Whatever. Like, I have no regrets about picking Auburn to make the championship game. Because if nothing else, Auburn was the pick to win you your bracket pool. Right. Like, if your goal was like, I'm going to put, you know, $10, $20, $50 in a pool and try to make, you know, try to win and make money off of that. The best pick by far was Auburn, because if Auburn won and beat UConn, you were going to knock out everybody's bracket. You were going to get points in that process. And then all these people are no chance in the Elite Eight, no chance in the Final Four. Auburn had a great chance of beating, you know, Auburn had a very decent chance about, you know, beating Illinois or Iowa State, and they had a good chance of beating Carolina, Arizona, Baylor, whoever. So there was a path, right? I still believe it was the right strategy. Like, if you were, again, like, numbers-wise, it was the right move. But it's hard to excuse that result because, man, like, I mean, the Baker-Mazzara ejection was the straw that broke the camel's back early on, made it very difficult. Obviously, such form piece, exposed their bad guard play. And then Pulakidas was insane. Like, all you could say, he was great.
I mean, this is a team, though, that we lauded their depth all year. It looked like they had, you know, 10 great guys, right? Between Katie Johnson, Denver Jones, Chaney Johnson, Jalen, they had, you know, enough to play 10 guys legit minutes, like, for most of the season. So, clearly, Mazzara was more a bigger piece of the puzzle than I would have thought. I mean, when I saw that news, because I started watching that game post-ejection, I wouldn't have thought, like, oh God, there goes Auburn's chance. Like, if they lost even, like, Broome or Williams or something. But Pudikidis hit a ton of shots. Danny Wolfe played pretty well.
I thought Wolfe struggled, honestly. Like, he wasn't as good as or maybe not struggle. I thought Danny Wolfe was going to have to be phenomenal for him to have a chance to win that game. I thought he was just okay.
I've seen him, I think, three times, and he's never lived up to the hype of, you know, being, like, this the most desired portal center, you know, dominating FIBA, you know, and all that stuff. He's never lived up to that, but I thought he played pretty well on against Auburn. But that was Pudikaitis with all the threes. was the main difference maker.
Right, and those were tough shots, right? Obviously, but I mean, I will say this. I mean, guess who would have guarded Pulukitis probably?
Cedric Mazar.
Right. So that was a huge moment in the game. Auburn, like, then had opportunities, right? Missed free throws, bad turnovers, mistakes, defensive lapses. Like, you know, they had every chance to win that game. But look, it's a real missed opportunity. I do think big picture, it's interesting. Like, Bruce Pearl's been atrocious in the tournament at Auburn, except for the final 4 years. And I know that's, again, we just did this with San Diego State. Like, you can't exclude the one good thing. But, like, given how that tournament run transpired, which was, you know, especially that first round game against New Mexico State many years ago, Brad, I mean, you remember it, like, craziness. The fact that, you know, they're, you know, really one bounce away from Bruce Pearl having an absolutely ridiculously bad tournament track record is crazy. But at the same time, like, you could say, all right, like, they were one bounce, you know, they were two free throws from beating Auburn or beating Yale. And if they beat Yale, who knows what run they go on, right? Like, I still think if, like, Auburn played UConn 10 times, Auburn would win, like, four of them.
I don't know. UConn's looking pretty formidable.
They do, yes. Klingon has been – it just feels like there's six guys on the floor at all times defensively. And part of that is, like the Northwestern film is really not the best film to do that with because, you know, Northwestern is playing a five-man who has zero juice in either Hunger or Preston, and then they are playing a – and anytime they go to their bench, no one, you know, no, you don't even have to guard Blake Smith. Like, so that makes it hard enough. But, you know, Klingon's rim protection was, like, unbelievable in that game in Brooklyn. And I don't know.
They handled Dusty, too. I mean, overtime. But, you know, when Berry went down, I figured that was it for Northwestern. And then
that was such a weird game. That was such a weird game where, like, it felt like Northwestern had it, and then they smoked the lead late, and then Brooks has to score to send it to overtime. And, you know, I mean, that was a brutal loss. If you were an FAU better, I did not, I actually had bet Northwestern on Bovada. I thought it was funny. Like, I didn't know why everyone was like, so in on betting FAU in that game.
Yeah. Did they not watch him play Temple, or they could not stop the
people like, well, Northwestern like
power for Temple.
Yeah, people were blaming like, Northwestern's injuries. I'm like, yeah, but like, still, really? Yeah, it just didn't make a lot of sense.
And now, I don't think I'm giving any credit to San Diego State against UConn, though. I think I'm already writing UConn in the Elite Eight. UAB, I thought, had it. I mean, that was a great push from them.
I will say, this is all very familiar to last year. If I mean, look, UConn is definitely better than Alabama was a year ago.
That is true, yeah. I forgot all about that. It's the same exact scenario where I think I probably on this exact day.
Right, there's no chance, right? Like, yeah. I remember us in San Diego State. They don't have enough talent. They're going to get smoked by Alabama. And just the style of play is very difficult.
But then both Illinois and Iowa State, I think it looked good.
Really good. Illinois is, like, really peaking. I'm worried that they peaked in the first weekend. Like, Illinois' vibes seem unbelievable, right? You got these, like, the players and Brad Underwood, like, doing this, like, chair dance after wins. Underwood sprinting in the locker room with his staffers with the water guns, super soakers. Like, they're blowing everybody out. Shannon's playing great. Like, the vibes are elite.
And if people freak out about, like, the first round scares, like Morehead scared Illinois, Western Kentucky was up, I think, double digits on Marquette at one point. Like, you get a handful of those. I think even South Dakota State may have taken the lead late in the first half against Iowa State.
Arizona was trailing to Long Beach and then got, yeah. Like, Illinois let them hang for a while and then just popped them in the second half. Like, Illinois' win probability never went below 75%. Morehead just, like, hung. Like, Morehead was up 45-43, you know?
And then even Washington State kept it close for a while with Iowa State. But that's, you know, styles are too similar, I think.
Yeah. What do you think of Iowa State and Illinois? Like, how do you, like, it's number, amazingly, Iowa State is now the number one defense on KenPom, which Houston had been forever. And Illinois is now the number one offense, which, you know, Alabama had been forever, and then UConn had jumped them. And now it's Illinois. How do you like handicap that matchup?
I think I'll go with the size of Iowa State. And between Jones and Ward, they're flying around, they're finishing lobs, they're being super athletic. You know, the front line of Iowa State is, you know, Illinois does it with like the similarly sized, kind of more versatile, switchable guys. Iowa State's got two great guards, right, with Lipsey and Gilbert, and then they got a bunch of bigs, even throwing in Momcilovic with the bigs as well. I think that their physicality can give Illinois issues, right?
So I think you're right in that assessment. I think the case I would make the opposite way is that Illinois thrives when you send two to the ball, right? Like realistically, what Illinois is trying to do with all the booty ball, you know, back downs for Damask, right? Like Illinois' goal is very like Jay Wright Villanova of like, do whatever you can to get inside the arc, get towards the paint, force a collapse, and then spray it and attack. Right. And they're not spraying it just to shoot threes. Right. They're a pretty middling 3-point shooting team, but they are spraying it and then driving it, or they're spraying it and they are, you know, quick high low or, you know, quick dump offs. Right. See the guy sitting in the dunker. And I think that's an issue. And you're playing against Iowa State, like defensively for Iowa State. I don't know how they really do that, because Iowa State wants to blitz you. Iowa State wants to turn you over. They want to force pressure. They want to force you into making bad decisions. Well, Illinois is going to not turn it over. Like Illinois takes care of the basketball. So it's a very interesting contrast of styles. And then like offensively, like theoretically, I mean, Illinois does a bad job of like containing dribble penetration and doesn't protect the rim. Well, that's a problem against Lipsey, but they also have big, you know, bigger guards that can be physical and hold up. And they're, you know, they're not going to gamble. Like they're going to run you off the 3-point line. They're going to make you beat it. You're going to have to beat them with twos. Like, I think it's the best game of the round. I really do. I think it's going to be a super fun, entertaining college basketball game.
Best game of the round. I'm excited for Purdue and Gonzaga, Creighton, Tennessee, even Houston, Duke played really well over the weekend. Houston might be a little vulnerable.
Iowa State, Illinois. Iowa State a 2-point favorite per Bovada. That's an interesting number. Other notes from the East. Yeah, Iowa State kind of ugly, but found a way to win both games. Washington State beating Drake. I mean, that leaves the Kyle Smith news. I don't know if we need to do that now or towards the end. We'll do all the carousel stuff. But that was a nice win for them. Great for the program. I will say, I mean, kind of another collapse by Drake and Darren DeVries. Like, which again, we'll talk carousel later, but just like, I don't know, that game was there. They should not have lost that game and did.
I didn't see any of that game. I can't comment, but I did see the Miami Drake game last year, right?
Really bad. Yeah. And a similar script too. Like, just kind of like stop running offense. Tucker DeVries kind of vanishes.
Do we think that their guards are going to go to West Virginia too?
I think Overton for sure will. He's good enough. I think Aiton Wright, I don't know.
And then BYU losing one of the first games of the tournament.
That was surprising. Like, I think Duquesne's a great story. I mean, awesome for Keith Dambrot. A bit of a weird taste of the mouth for BYU after a terrific season.
BYU was like, I guess they're good, right? Like, they're firing threes. They're doing great in the analytics. But, like, I could never get excited about, like,
just when you had
Dallin Hall and Spencer Johnson.
I was going to say, once you finally talked yourself into them in February, it was when they, like, stopped working.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, like, bigger picture with that program. I'm thinking BYU will be a team we talk a lot about this offseason because they're going to have to go hit the portal. It's going to be challenging to go get players. I mean, they're probably going to be untalented relative to the rest of the Big 12. We're going to have to figure out how much we need to adjust.
How many threes can they fire up? And how many backdoor passes can their bigs throw to make up for it?
But yeah, so the Sweet 16 in the East, UConn, San Diego State, Illinois, Iowa State. You said you're picking UConn and Iowa State?
Yeah.
I'll take UConn and Illinois. And then Elite Eight. I mean, I don't really want to pick against UConn, but I do think Illinois could push them.
I'm sticking with UConn, too. I'm having deep regret not picking them to win in my bracket pool.
All right, let's move down the bracket to the West.
I mean, are we headed toward a Caleb Love bowl in the Elite Eight?
Feels like we are, right? Like
that Alabama Grand Canyon game last night. I don't know what adjective to use for that, but we're just like flying up and down the court. Felt like Grand Canyon had control. Mark Sears had a bunch of, you know, bunch of three pointers. Grand Canyon missed a ton of free throws, and Bama pulled it out, but didn't fill me with confidence about Alabama.
So, I mean, lots to get to in this region. I will say with Bama, everyone said they were cooked, they had no shot, you know, they're going to lose to Charleston, whatever. They win both games by double digits. Be like, Bama still sucks. Like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Bama beats North Carolina. But I mean, Carolina is such an interesting team in that. I mean, I saw them up close. I was like pretty underwhelmed by Carolina. Both games. I know they played really well down the stretch against Michigan State. But like at the end of the day, they're not like a super explosive team, and we knew that, right? But I do think in March, it's harder to get your shit in March. And I thought that especially early on when Michigan State came out aggressive, I thought Carolina, like Cormac Ryan's like, what do I do? Elliot Cadeau's like, what do I do? Seth Trimble, what do I do? Like there was too many guys on the floor who weren't threats. And Harrison Ingram made 5 threes to make up for that, but he's not going to make 5 threes every game. And if Harrison Ingram goes cold, it gets hard for them to score.
Cadeau's a really interesting player because – I mean, he might be the best passer in all of college basketball. He makes these like incredible like give and go reads. He's got this great vision, but he's just such like a non-entity scoring the ball. But you feel like you got to have him out there. Every time he has the ball, it means RJ Davis or Bacot or Ingram doesn't have the ball. So he's just this kind of weird piece. I feel like he's got to come back and make a nice little scoring jump and be like a borderline All-American next year. Like his passing was that good, but in his current form, it's just kind of a weird fit there. And I mean, we all know that UNC is the worst one seed by far. Like, no one's picking them against Houston, Purdue, or UConn on a neutral court.
I agree. I mean, look, I don't mind Carolina, but the pop is somewhat missing.
And I had Bama in the Sweet 16. I did have them losing to Mississippi State, though. They were completely outclassed by Michigan State. I was stunned. Completely stunned.
I think again, of weapons. Part of that was Cam Matthews got hurt, and then DJ Jeffrey or Cam Matthews had foul trouble. DJ Jeffrey got hurt, but
even before that, though, Michigan State came right off the jump and really punched in the mouth.
100%. Look, I would not be surprised if Alabama. I would not be surprised if Alabama made the Final Four. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost by 20 to Carolina. It's kind of the way they've been all year. I will say Arizona has not been impressive in this tournament.
Been too much Caleb Love.
They still feel like the most dangerous team in this region, but they're not playing that well.
Well, Boswell against Dayton like didn't even score. Like didn't score until late. And then when you have Caleb Love jacking shots, you're playing traditionally with two bigs. Larson's kind of come back down to earth, it seems. Their guard play in practice isn't matching their guard play on paper. Like, their bigs aren't shot creators. You know, even from like a low post perspective, they don't do a ton of throwing it into Balo, at least, you know, doesn't feel that way.
The thing that I would worry about with Arizona is what happens if they get down in a game and they can't play Caleb. Right? Like, when they get desperate, they go through Caleb, and you can't do that because he'll start shucking. So then you take him off the floor and you play
KJ Lewis or Jaden Bradley.
Correct. Which is not good. Offensively, at least. So I'm curious to see, can someone pop him, right? Because Long Beach couldn't get enough of a lead, and Dayton, you know, was playing from behind the whole game, right? Can Clemson go score 25 in the first 12 minutes?
Another stunning result. I can't believe Clemson beat Baylor. Believe Clemson beat New Mexico.
Clemson looked awesome all weekend. Like, completely awesome. Like, the guards were great. Shefflin and Hall were crushing it. Jack Clark was giving them minutes. Like, it was – they were very impressive.
I mean, I guess we got to say that they have a shot against Arizona, because Arizona hasn't been lighting the world on fire, and Clemson is. I mean, that just seems so crazy. Like, that was, like, the one – I was so confident in that New Mexico over Clemson pick, and that was – you know, complete domination. And I mean, they don't have the same size as Arizona, and obviously Shefflin and Hall are not as athletic or as, you know, big and strong as the Arizona bigs, but they play two pretty good bigs. I mean, they're tough. We'll see if they can match up. We'll see if Hall can maybe hit some threes, spread out Balo a little bit, but talent wise, you still got to go with Arizona.
Yeah.
Nevada. What on earth was that?
Brutal.
I shut it off. I thought it was over. I shut it off when it hit what 18 or something. 18 point lead.
I can't, like. Again, it was unfathomable. And this is, again, why I laugh. Like, oh, people are like, this is why I think it's so stupid. And people are like, oh, the Mountain West, like is bad in the tournament. It's like, well, like, again, like, yes, like, did the league have a great March? No, of course not. But, like, there was no, like, consistent thread. It wasn't like, oh, man, all these Mountain West teams look out-talented. It wasn't, oh, man, all these Mountain West teams are too small, or they're not well-coached, or they're not disciplined, or they play goofy styles, right? Like, Boise held Colorado to 60 points. Colorado turned around and scored, like, 180 in their next two, but Boise's three best players shit themselves. Nevada's dominating Dayton, and then all of a sudden, like, left the foot off. Like, I think Nevada outscored Dayton by, like, 25 points over, like, a 25-minute stretch of the game. And then the final, like, 7 minutes completely fell off the face of the earth. Right, Colorado State dominated. I mean, like, Virginia's Virginia, but, like, Colorado State scored 1.1 points per possession against Virginia, and then turned around against Texas and missed every wide open shot. I mean, Pat Cartier legitimately missed like four wide open layups against Texas. It was unbelievable. And then, you know, I mean, look, New Mexico was, you just outplayed by Clemson. We just say Clemson was playing great. They just beat Baylor, whatever. So I don't know. It was just stupid to me. Like, it was such a thing. But yeah, Nevada. What a bizarre collapse. I don't know who else is there in that region that we should talk about.
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's all the notable games. I mean, Grand Canyon beating St. Mary's, whatever.
I didn't watch that game. That was too late for me.
I didn't watch it either. Was I at a game? No, I was watching something else probably. Seems like Grand Canyon kind of controlled it, though. Good for them. Great win. The Grand Canyon discourse is really annoying. Like, I don't really give a like. Who cares
about the stature of their school?
Yeah, or like, oh yeah, or even like, oh, they spend more money than everyone else, so they, you know, it doesn't count. What do you mean? They're not like the easiest Cinderella. I mean, most teams aren't. know.
I mean, James Madison, they said, has like 22,000 students. That's crazy. And I guess Cinderella's can be big schools, I guess. But, probably the best, at least my favorite game of the tournament, moving to a different region. Oakland and Kentucky.
So we're off to the south, yes.
I mean, that was just perfect. He's flying, a Gulkey is flying around screens, contorting his body, just launching these crazy Steph Curry threes. And then they're all going in. Kentucky's trying to put like the people who are known as like some of the worst defenders in the country to run Gulkey around screens, like Dillingham and.
What were they doing? You texted this to me. You're like, casual thought. Why don't they just stick like a Dufiero on him and make him run through that guy?
Yeah. Isn't that the whole point of having a Dufiero? But. And then in both Oakland's games, once Gulkey started hitting shots, Townsend just feasted on the inside.
Yeah, look, like, so on the Kentucky thing, I think where I would start is this. Realistically, when we're talking about the best coaches in the country, like, the reason we consider them to be great coaches is that they, like, steal you a few possessions a game, right? Or steal you a couple of baskets, right? In terms of in-game coaching, right?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Greg McDermott basically stole Creighton a couple possessions in the Oregon game, right? He killed a two-for-one. He did a...
There was a Shireman corner three baseline out of bounds. There was the sideline out of bounds fake three-pointer lobbed to Kalkbrenner. There was...
They, like, blitzed Cousinard in the ball screen in overtime and, like, changed up the coverage and, like, kind of screwed him up, right? Like... Things like that. That's how you win. It feels like Kentucky is in the opposite mode, where like you're trying to counteract Cal, right? Cal is costing you a few a game, right? He's starting DJ Wagner and Justin Edwards over Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham.
I have a take here. Anytime that a coach starts a player knowing he's not going to finish the game, he's just, that's not like, that is solely political. That's not strategical at all.
It's really bizarre.
Like, he knows that Dillingham and Shepard are going to close over Wagner and Edwards, or at least in a perfect healthy scenario would close. I mean, it used to drive me crazy that the year that Cooley, they made the NIT, you know, they snapped their five in a row NCAA tournament streak. They would start Jimmy Nichols over Isaiah Jackson. Jimmy Nichols was a freshman. Jackson was a senior. Jackson was significantly better. And Cooley would be like, oh, no, I like our look with Jackson coming off the bench. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you can't play a guy 30 minutes, you know. Manu Ginobili, like, broke people's brains. Like, you need your best players on the floor together.
I also, look, I would have had no issue or less of an issue with Kentucky if they had started one of DJ and – or one of Dillingham and Shepard with DJ. Right? If the idea was, like, look, you know, we want a guy who can really score coming off the bench, and DJ is more defense first. And so we'd rather stagger early in the game with Reed Shepard and Dillingham and Reeves, right? We want to stagger those three so that we always have two of them on the floor. That'd be fine. But he took both of them off the floor. Usually, like, so then you're starting slow. They always started slow this year. Like, you did took way too long to stop Gulkey. I know they did an interview today, and he was like, you know, Gulkey's had games where he shot 1 for 9. So we didn't want to, like, sell out to stop him and then get beat by Townsend. It's like, yes, but, like, number one, get beat with twos, not threes. And number two, like, again, after three or four threes, the entire game plan should have been ripped up. It's like, all right, we just got to stop Gulkey.
And Calipari was like, Robert Dillingham will stop him. Like, oh, my God. I mean, I feel similarly. And I think this one, at least you could maybe argue, the Trey Kaufman run over Mason Gillis. Like, it feels political to get Kaufman Wren involved in the, you know, keep him around for next year when they're always going to close with Gillis at the four, right?
Agreed. But Kaufman Wren at least plays a lot, and they do look okay in that lineup.
I mean, and this is a Calipari staple, right? There are certain guys who are allowed to start, and that's based on their recruiting rankings. And even, you know, whether it's Reed Sheppard or Rob Billingham or Devin Booker, right, who quickly established that they're better than their recruiting ranking, Calipari still needs to keep his sales pitch intact of, if you're the number one player, come here, and even if you don't earn it, you'll still start. But Kentucky's bigger issue was, not so much a starting lineup, but leaving Gaulke to get off, 15 three-pointers, making 10 of them, and then Towson just killed both them and NC State around the rim as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, were they unlucky that they shot the Oakland shot the lights out? Yes. Could that happen? You can't lose that game, especially after what happened two years ago, with St. Peter's. So, other notes from that was a great game. Other notes from the South: James Madison dominated Wisconsin. Just kind of a good reminder that Wisconsin's talent level is not very high. Because look, you can say what you want, like how they played. James Madison was much better against Wisconsin than they were against Duke. But, like, it was very, like, palpable watching James Madison play Wisconsin. Like, okay, like, they can hang with these guys. Like, physically, speed, you know, whatever. Like, I wish I had put more, you know, on Bovada, you know, on James Madison money line, like, right away. Like, hit it live. Because I just felt like in the first 5 minutes, it was very, very apparent that James Madison was, like, able to hang. And then against Duke, like, the speed, the physicality, the rebounding was too much to handle. And then, obviously, the three barrage came as well. But it was a good reminder. Again, the talent level with Wisconsin is not very good. Now you're losing a Seijin who kind of fell out of the rotation. You're going to, I think, lose AJ Store, right? It seems like he's off to the portal. The Chucky Hepburn rumors never die. There's, you know, certainly a chance he could be on the move. Like, they seem to think they're recruiting better, right? The 24th class is good. The Blackwell's a good player. The guys do get better in that program. And I do agree with that. But, like what is... like, what is the path to Wisconsin, like, digging themselves out of, like, this status quo, which is, like, the good years look something like this, which is, like, top four-ish in the Big Ten, but, like, still probably, like, not really built to win in March, and the bad years are what last year looked like, which is making the NIT.
Well, I texted you this, actually, I think, like, 2 months ago at this point. They should go out and get Jair Davis, play power forward. I mean, that's just keeping the status quo. Your only hope, right? You'll get a transfer in there to play the four. You'll move Blackwell into the starting lineup, and he'll have a big sophomore jump. Winter will make a big sophomore jump. You can play him with Crowell more, get you a bigger look out there. And then your backcourt of Hepburn and Klesman, it'll be the third year together, right? And both guys are very good players. And that's your team. That's your top six right there.
Yeah. Got to get a couple, though. Got to find a way. JMU moves on, loses to Duke. I thought Duke was really good, right? Like, you were impressed?
Yeah. And again, this is Vermont kept it close in the first half. They were knocking in some three-pointers. And then Duke just turned the pressure on, started hitting some threes themselves. Proctor was hitting threes, McCain was hitting threes. And I'm very excited for this Duke-Houston matchup incoming.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. How do you handicap that?
Admittedly, I shut off the Houston-Texas A&M game last night. And then when I was brushing my teeth for bed, I saw they tied it, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to bed. So I did not see the full Houston experience, but I think Houston's physicality should give Duke problems, right? Like,
well, I think the easiest way to describe this game is that if the whole conversation all year was that Duke doesn't have enough dogs, they picked the bad game to not have dogs, right? Like, Houston's going to try to mess them up. Like, Houston's going to get under their skin, like, really bully them, get physical, like. I don't know. Like, I think Shed's a problem in this game. But I also just, like, every time you watch Houston, even when they're scoring at a high clip, it doesn't feel like they should be scoring at a high clip. Right? You're not like, wow, this is beautiful offense.
No, and I've never really felt the Filipowski love that the draft people, you know, seem to be in on him as, like, a top 10 or a lottery pick, but I mean, he's going to be going up against Francis and Roberts. I mean, him and Mitchell and Young are going to have their hands full on the glass there. Did Roach come back after that pinky? Do we know that?
Yeah, he did. He played.
He played. So hopefully he's good to go. But yeah, Proctor and... I mean, McCain's very good, very, very good, but he's not super physical or super athletic. I think that could be an issue against Houston, but that is maybe the most anticipated game for me in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. Bottom half of the bracket, the NC State, incredible story rolls on. Look at Marquette. Marquette got through Colorado and Western Kentucky. That Colorado Florida game was a lot of fun, right?
Colorado Marquette was a lot of fun too.
True. Kolick looks himself, which is a big deal.
Yeah, he was awesome. Joplin rebounding the ball like I've never seen him before. I'm not an Oso guy, officially. I've seen one too many jump hook push shots rattle off the rim. Any chance he comes back next year?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine him working in the NBA, but draft people seem a little more down on him, but still on the mock draft. Moving forward, Marquette's got to shoot the ball better. Cam Jones is on fire, but they need more. And then Ross hit some big ones against Colorado, but especially against Western Kentucky. There was so many great looks, open threes that weren't going down and let the Hilltoppers back in it. So, and then a team with guys like Kolek and that unselfish mentality. That there was a lot of overpassing as well early. I guess that was fixed against Colorado with them getting to the rim so easily. Lampkin, not much of a rim protector.
Look, I think the one thing I'd say with Marquette that's been encouraging is it feels like Jones took a step without Kolick and looked good with him back. Like, Cam Jones is one of those underappreciated players in the country, in my opinion.
Absolutely. He's incredible around the rim.
Phenomenal.
He's like a jump stop out of a spin move where he's like not even looking at the rim and he just like gets right to the doorstep and just like flips it up.
He's one of the more unique players I can remember because he gets to the rim all the time but never gets fouled.
Because he has no physicality at all. It's all craft. Spinning high off the glass, looping his arm in kind of a hook shot, and then Stevie Mitchell's grown on me too. I mean, his defense is legit. Not so much against Colorado, but toward the end of the year and everything, he's been scoring it more. He's been hitting open threes. He's been getting the rim a little bit. So that's a huge piece for them as well. And Ben Gold's hitting threes. One of the few stretch fives in the country that actually hits shots. So I'm actually pretty bullish on Marquette moving forward. I hope they get by NC State, and then they'll have a matchup with either Duke or Houston.
You would think, but I mean, DJ Burns is crushing it, right? I mean, why is the train going to stop now for Kevin Keats and Co?
I mean, Oakland with their Oakland blew that game. All right, down the stretch, the double the post at times turned into like quadruple the post, and there was one play. I think it was probably in overtime where they sent like four guys at DJ Burns. Had an easy kick out. I think the Javon Taylor for a three, just wide open. The kind of undisciplined defense, that goofy zone, which I guess worked to keep Oakland in the game, but it was just so porous. I wasn't buying that zone at all. And Burns really picked him apart with overplaying against him. That I hope between Oso and Gold, they can at least try to play him more straight up. Use their length.
I think the Cinderella story has to be ending, right? It has to be over. I can't fathom that this team is this good all of a sudden.
Out of nowhere, too. And it's really all because they're playing the two bigs, you know, between Burns, Diarra, and Middlebrooks, and they've all looked great since the SEC tournament.
Yeah. You know, I just think it's one of those confidence things. Like they started to play free and now they're rolling.
And then what else was that region that we did? Wisconsin. Texas Tech kind of just faded off. Washington was back, but that team. That team was always kind of floating between like top 25 and the bubble.
Yeah, that was weird.
They never really scared me. They had some injuries. Just kind of a weird group, but McCaslin's clearly an excellent coach. He got a six seed in year one, and they should have the resources to hit that portal pretty hard.
I think there's going to be a lot of turnover at Texas Tech. Could be guys in, guys out. I do think that the end result will be pretty good, but I think the culture is going to change. Final region, I guess we should be seeing Marquette versus Duke or Marquette Houston.
I have Marquette Houston.
I do too, but maybe I feel like I'm not thinking enough about it. Like I think I'm gonna underthink myself into Duke. If that makes sense. Probably doesn't. Anyway, let's talk the Midwest. Purdue rolled past Utah State. I feel like that was a pretty encouraging performance, right? Not, again, obviously any 39-point win is an encouraging performance. But I thought the way that Purdue played, especially against a team that, you know, look, Utah State's a mid-major team. They're not super talented, but, like, was going to switch and play four guards and like put Edie in conflict and like do all sorts of things that could have caused problems, and Purdue scored 106 and completely dominated. Like if that game wasn't evidence for you that like Zach Edey's a completely different player than like the FDU Zach Edey, I don't know what like people need to watch.
And Matt Painter's taking shots at people who don't like Zach Edey. That's not me. Okay, I love the enormous center. I was a huge Mamadou Ndiaye fan. He had Rick Pitino on the ropes. So all the listeners, to be clear, no one loves the enormous center more than me.
All right. Good to know, Brad. We appreciate you sticking up for him. A lot of people do hate Zach. It does. It drives me nuts, I will say. I don't get it.
Because it's like too unstoppable that people just say, oh, it just must be unfair. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Look, I also don't understand. Again, maybe I'm just like too much of a basketball fan. But people say it's not like it's horrible to watch. I don't know. Like I enjoy watching him play.
I mean, there are some good teams that are horrible to watch. Some of those West Virginia teams that would just foul incessantly.
Yes.
Like, I just can't watch this. But Purdue's not like that.
Gonzaga rolling Kansas, and then people way overreacting to Bill Self admitting, obviously, that he is worried about next season is ridiculous.
But where is Hunter Dickinson going to go?
I kind of think he should portal.
I mean, they already added Floyd Badunga. They're reaching out to Cliff Amore.
They're not getting Cliff Amore, but...
But I assume there'll be more bigs in the portal, and that if they're reaching out to Cliff, they'll reach out to other guys too. But
that is true.
Yeah, Hunter Dickinson should go to Georgetown.
He kind of should, to be honest.
Like, he did the Kansas thing. He made a ton of money. He had a great statistical season. They didn't win a ton. This is like the most losses that Bill Self's ever had. Why not go home and help Georgetown do the same thing? Get a
also know he would get paid.
You don't think he would get paid at Georgetown?
We know he would. He would get. I mean, he'd get $1 million.
Yeah. I mean, it is still so crazy that they have the bloggers, these supposed fans of the team, just talking about cheating and tampering openly and all the money they have.
It's super crazy. Well, I also wonder if any of their sources have vanished now that Ivan Thomas is off to Hampton and Greg Fahey is the associate head coach.
My understanding was that Thomas was not a good coach. That was until like 2 years ago, that was the narrative, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, he's this great leader of men. He should get a head coaching job. So I guess we'll see how he does in Hampton. But I mean, that's a tough job for the Colonial, right?
It's not an easy job. I will say this. Sometimes when the own coaching staff pushes a guy really hard as a good head coaching candidate, it's because they'd like to upgrade their staff.
But then the two names been rumored for that Georgetown spot are Preston Murphy. Kenny who's Jones. Obviously played at URI, I think. I think he was a URI assistant, a Creighton assistant. Now he's at Alabama. And he's Kenny Preston. Johnson, yeah, who's currently at URI.
DMV.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see who they go with. But.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I'm not super worried about it. Yeah, Kansas is interesting. They have to blow it up. They have to go get new talent. I do think they're going to be fine. Like, I think there's been a lot of overreactions. Like, they have, like, especially, I don't know if Furphy's going to come back. That's obviously the big swing. But theoretically, what, Harris will be back?
Adams. Harris
should be back. You should get El Marco back. You might get Furphy back, even if you don't, that's okay. You have Flory Badunga, you have LeBaron Filin, whatever his name is.
Aren't they leading for Liam McNeely, too?
Theoretically, yeah. And then, you know, whatever you want in the portal, you're Kansas. Yes. You're going to get guys. Like, their mistakes this past year were, number one, by taking Hunter, they scared off the rest of the roster. Number two, so they lost both Ejiofor and Uday, so they had no depth. Number two, taking back Zach Clements, which was just, like, super bizarre.
But, like, they still had three open scholarships at the end, right?
Yes, but that's because guys left so late was the big issue, right? Like, Ejiofor waited until, like, the last day of the portal.
Right, so they lost them, and then Arturo Morris, who was supposed to be a starter, obviously got kicked off the team. And then Timberlake, who was supposed to be a starter until you realize he stunk. And that was it.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Don't, not too worried about them. Gonzaga, like, do we think Gonzaga can beat Kentucky? Or not Kentucky, excuse me. Purdue?
Probably not. I mean, they do most of their work inside, right, with EK and Watson.
I guess caused some problems just because of the tempo and what Nembhard can do getting downhill.
Yeah, maybe Nembhard can put him in pick and roll or something, but I mean, you've been on this, you know, for what, 6-8 months, that Braden Smith that we have today is not the Braden Smith of last year. He's like an elite college point guard. With that, plus the best player in the country, plus shooters, I think that gives Purdue certainly an edge over Gonzaga. Like, can Graham Ike even beat Graham Ike against Zach Edey?
Right. That's, yeah. They probably can't post score is the problem. But the ball screen coverage will be interesting for Purdue. My guess is they'll just play drop and force Nembhard to make a bunch of tough twos. But I don't know.
And then Creighton, great game against Oregon. They shot it terribly for most of the game, and they pulled it out. Their fast pace had Oregon huffing and puffing after like 5 minutes. But Cousinard and Dante were both incredible.
That was insane. I mean, Cousinard's run was wild.
It's just Oregon, like, everybody gets hurt all the time.
Yeah, they need to go track down a new strength coach or something, new trainer.
Because I'm watching them, like, wait, what happened to Nathan Biddle? And it's like, oh, he played 5 games this year, but he played 2 in January, so I think he can't even redshirt. And then it's like, oh, what happened to this guy? What happened to that guy? Like, they played like six guys. They played. Rigsby was the only guy off the bench, I think, who got any real time. That was a team that I bet we talked about how deep they were in the preseason, too. A great fight from Oregon. They, kind of like NC State, they kind of stunk until, like, last week. But Cousinard and Dante were both incredible, and they gave Creighton a huge test. Creighton, Tennessee is a really interesting game. I mean, they're kind of similar with where they got the huge shot blocker in the middle. Kalkbrenner and Adu are pretty similar players. And where Tennessee has a bunch of athletes around Dalton Connect, Creighton, it's all shooting.
My general view on Tennessee is that
they have a bunch of guys who are really good at making floaters. I know that sounds like a kind of a bizarre distinction, but like against Creighton, with the way that Creighton defends you and kind of forces you, like kind of runs you off the line and then funnels you into Kalkbrenner, the ability for Zakai Ziegler, Santiago Vescovi, and Dalton Connect to like just kind of hit those funky middies is, I think, the thing that might decide this game. I like Tennessee. It'll be fascinating, though. I mean, look, this region is loaded with storylines. Gonzaga, first title, Purdue, redemption, Tennessee, first Final Four, Creighton, first Final Four.
After they had it last year.
Right.
They had San Diego State on the ropes. They're going to have to shoot it better. It's funny, in that Oregon game, there was just like watching it. It felt like Ashworth needs the ball. Ashworth's getting the good shots. Alexander's forcing it. And then Ashworth came through late with a few threes. We'll see if he can carry that over to Tennessee. But speaking of guys who I'm not sold on their NBA, Trey Alexander. I think this year has gone quite as well.
I think Trey Alexander sucks. It's my hottest take.
He's really good in the mid-range. He's a fine three-point shooter. And he gets assists. But you watch him, it feels like passing is such an afterthought. He dribbles so much. He's weaving around. He's shooting these fadeaways. He's not great around the rim. His defense was supposed to be his strong point. He could not even get a hand up against Cousinard. They had to put Shireman on him. Baylor Shireman is Creighton's defensive stopper. How crazy is that? I do actually like Shireman for the NBA, but yeah, Big East wise, I'm selling Oso and Alexander NBA stuff.
I think Alexander is critical to Creighton because he's the only guy that like really, really, really gets in the paint.
But he doesn't finish. He does like a turnaround 10-footer. Right.
But yeah, that's
something that
Shireman doesn't get anywhere and Ashworth doesn't get anywhere.
Right. That's something that I was saying over the summer, looking at this roster, like, do they have too much shooting and not enough athleticism? Like who gets to the rim? And for most of the year, it just turns out that they don't really need to. Like they'll have Kaufman lobs, they'll have Shireman backdowns, Alexander fadeaways, and that's enough. But portal wise, I think if they're going to add Frankie Fiddler to replace Shireman, I think Cockburner's coming back. And then if Alexander leaves, you got to get somebody who can get downhill.
I think they're in good shape.
Yeah. This Jackson McAndrew guy is supposed to be like an elite, elite shooter. He's huge.
All right, let's move on. Let's hit some carousel stuff real quick before we wrap up the show, because we've already been going over an hour. We have to talk carousel. There's been a lot of crazy shit. Dusty to Michigan was the first like massive like bombshell in that it really shapes the other carousel discussion. Seems like Louisville had really lined up. I think it was fascinating because I feel like over the last like 3 weeks, everyone kind of decided like, are we sure Dusty's that good? And in that time period, like, every job decided he was who they had to have. Like, Vanderbilt really wanted him. Louisville really wanted him. Michigan really wanted him. He chooses Michigan. I think the narrative on him has gotten ridiculous because, at the end of the day, he still built an at-large team twice at FAU. Like the idea that, like Josh Schertz might be the next head coach at Louisville. We're saying that Dusty May isn't a good enough hire for Michigan, even if he didn't win a game in the tournament. Like, the Final Four, notwithstanding, Dusty May is still a realistic candidate for Michigan.
Yeah, I mean
Dan Parise hasn't won a tournament game. He got West Virginia. He was probably Michigan's backup plan.
Yeah, I mean, Dusty was super overrated. Florida Atlantic was super overrated. But at the end of the day, he built an at-large team in consecutive seasons at a school that had no business even coming close.
Correct. Like, will he win at Michigan? We'll see. No one really knows. I do think he'll have a good staff. I think Dusty is incredibly well-liked in college basketball. Like, everyone in coaching thinks Dusty is an awesome person.
And Michigan has had NIL concerns, but, I mean, it's Michigan. How do you not figure that out? You know, and I'm sure Dusty got some assurances with that before taking the job.
I will say Dusty's agent, Andy Miller from Clutch, who doesn't really work in college coaching that much. He's mostly a player agent. It is absolutely crazy that Andy Miller did not get Dusty May 6 years or more and did not get him $4 million or more. Like, that is like, Dusty taking Michigan was a surprise to people in the industry. Dusty taking Michigan and not getting 6 years or $4 million was like the shocking, most shocking thing. Like it's unbelievable. People like there are people who are like absolutely flabbergasted by that. But look, like, I think it's a good hire. I think he'll find a way to win. Does set up Louisville to be in some trouble. I think, look, at the end of the day, Ohio State hired Jake Diebler and Michigan got Dusty May. Process-wise, advantage Michigan. Whether it works, I mean, who knows, right? Like, look, I think the thing I would say is this, like, if Dusty May is Shaka Smart, that was not a failure. Right? Dusty May, like, Shaka Smart did not have a great run at Texas, but Shaka Smart is like is proven to be a very good coach. He's a top 30 coach in the sport. if Dusty May winds up being that, then Michigan got a good hire who can be their head coach for, I don't know, 15 years. That's perfect. I don't know. Guess that opens up Louisville, which seems like it was going to go to Dusty. You know, they tried for Scott Drew, didn't work. It seems like there are no real. It seems like Louisville has no real good options at the moment. Sitting like among the sitting high major coaches, it doesn't seem like there's even like a Chris Collins level candidate, right? Like if Shaheen is the best sitting high major coach, kind of trouble, right? If you're Louisville. So it seems to me, again, I'm saying this, by the time this is released, I imagine Louisville will have made a hire. But like the names I continue to hear are Pat Kelsey and Josh Schertz. And I'm not convinced that I think either would be considered a really bad hire from the start. But now that things have played out, they feel like okay landing places.
I mean, Shaheen and Jerome Tang and all those guys, you mentioned Chris Collins. And those would be better hires, I think, than Schertz or Kelsey. But I mean, Louisville fans are getting really hung up on like the prestige of your coach. You just got to win. And if you have the NIL, the good X and O guy in there, plus great NIL is going to get it done.
Well, the other thing is that like, you can't get a prestigious coach without like you can't become a prestigious coach without taking a job, right? Like,
yeah.
And it seems as though most of these prestigious coaches don't want to move, right? Nate Oates has no interest in leaving Alabama. Bruce Pearl has no interest in leaving Auburn. Kelvin Sampson has no interest in leaving. Scott Drew's like.
Why would they leave and rebuild? That doesn't make any sense because the history's a little bit better. Like, who cares?
Kentucky, I think, will be different if Kentucky opens because Kentucky's resources are so insane that someone will just be like, screw this, I want the job. But, like, you know, at these football schools, especially in the Power 2, you know, in the SEC or the Big 10, you know, the money is so good. Why would you ever walk away from it? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's super tricky. So does that mean you have to hire, like, a Nate Oates? And make it work, like a Nate Oates type being someone from, you know, a mid-major who has some track record. The problem is, like, even that group, like, I don't think there's, like, a Nate Oates level candidate. I mean, Nate Oates got a 6 seed, right? Other than Dusty, like, who is that guy? Right? DeVries has lost both, you know, both tournament games in, like, completely collapsed fashion in the last 2 years. Pat Kelsey's winless in the tournament hasn't even come close to winning a game. You know, like, Schertz didn't make the tournament this year. They could have made a run if they had made it, but they didn't. Nico Medved, for, you know, my support of him, you know, he hasn't won a tournament game other than the first four. So it's not like he's, like, a super great candidate for the job. It's just tricky.
Yeah, but, you know, to your point, right, Nate Oates was the coach at Buffalo. Like, even recent history, you go down the list and all these guys are from mid-major jobs. And, like, you can't just say, oh, we've won more national championships, we're going to take the Auburn coach because they haven't won any. Like, that's just not how this works. Like, why would you – you make so much money. You have it rolling. Why would you want to start from scratch? I mean, Kentucky wouldn't be starting from scratch, or Louisville would. But for Kentucky, like, how can you – I don't care about – offsets or whatever, like, you're gonna pay him $33 million. What if Calipari doesn't get another job? What if Calipari says, you know what, I think I'm good, you know, owe him the $33 million?
I mean, they have the money to pay him if they have to,
but at that point, just run it back again. You're this year went so terribly and you were a 3 seed. Run it back again. You'll get a couple great transfers. A couple guys will come back. A couple great recruits. You'll get a top 4 seed again. And we'll see when the rubber meets the road and you're playing 14 seed Youngstown State next year.
What happens? Well, So I guess the question I would have for you in response is like, all right, you bring him back and he loses in the second round to like, I don't know. You know, they get a 2 seed and they lose to 7 seed.
Marquette.
Or they get a 4 seed and they lose to 5 seed, you know, Gonzaga.
San Diego State, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, at that point now, is it okay to fire him? Because the buyout's now 25 instead of 33.
That's $8 million less. That's a lot of money. Right, because, like, what's... So the issue is you're not making it further in the tournament, as far in the tournament as you want. A lot of that's just variance, right? Like, if you're getting the top 4 seeds, you're going to get back there, even if you think Cal has lost the juice.
I don't know. I have a hard time with it. I mean, people have said it. I'm not the first. But I do sort of think that, like, the best outcome for everyone would be, like, Cal going to Louisville and Kentucky getting Scott Drew or Tommy Lloyd or whatever.
Cal going to Louisville. Oh, my God.
Wouldn't it be great? I mean, look, it's the best
hire. Great content, yeah.
And it's the best hire they can make.
Cal Perry should have gone up to Chicago. Gone to DePaul.
Him and Dwayne reunited. Yeah. Let's see. Elsewhere in the carousel, DeVries to West Virginia. That feels like uncontroversial, right? Like, I'm not like out of my seat enthused by it, but I think it's a good hire. I think any of the 3 options they had at the end, which were DeVries, Byington, and Nico, would have worked well.
That was one job, right? Because they have a ton of NIL, but they're at least their fans didn't seem to be hung up on getting this huge name.
Yes.
Which is good. I mean, now they have all this NIL. They got Darren and Tucker coming down. The guy has gotten what? He got Drake an actual at-large bid. Then he got an at-large caliber this year, and they won the Valley last year. So,
yeah, the consistency is remarkable. The ability to reload this past year is really impressive. Having Tucker attached doesn't hurt. I think my worry would be is, like, I don't know what the ceiling is.
How so? Because the NIL is there. That's the ceiling.
Well, I guess my point is, like, DeVries never did build, like, an elite team at Drake. Like, even the teams that got, like, were at large, good. Like, this team did not feel overwhelming, right? I'm concerned that West Virginia is going to build a bunch of, like, bubble teams. So for me, like what Byington did this year at JMU was, like that to me is the sign of, like, okay, like, you're basically, you might be getting, like, a Dusty level higher. Or shit, like... Like, I think Nico as a coach, like, I think to me, Nico is like John Beilein. Well, like, maybe it works, maybe it won't, but, like, if you hit it, you might have a guy who could go win championships or, like, compete for championships. I'm not necessarily sold that DeVries is that guy, but it's hard to argue with the hire because I think he'll win.
That's fair.
And then that led Byington to
Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Okay, you're gonna pay all that money to get rid of Stackhouse, and we're going with a guy who's built, you know, one good team, right? Feels like too big of a risk for that drastic buyout, right? Because the whole point of buying out Stackhouse was you were gonna make a run at Dusty May and all these guys. I guess would you rather have Mark Byington to Chris Mack?
I think so. Look, my issue with Chris Mack is that I think the only reason he wanted Vanderbilt was his daughter's already going to be there in Nashville. Like, no knock on Chris Mack, he's a good coach, but what did Chris Mack do? Like, well, why did Chris Mack want Vanderbilt and not Michigan? Why did Chris Mack not want Vanderbilt and not like any other job. He wanted Vanderbilt because his daughter was going to be there. Like what happens if Josh Church got Louisville? Do we think that if Josh Church got Louisville, do we think that Chris Mack would take SLU? And if not, then I'm not sure he's serious about coaching because it's a $2 million job. So
where does SLU turn if Schertz goes to Louisville?
I honestly don't know. I think they're like kind of screwed, to be honest with you.
And then we got Danny Sprinkle to Washington, the long rumored.
Yes. That was weird because Danny Sprinkle seemed to be keeping the seat warm at Oklahoma State and Vanderbilt with like no real reason.
Well, because there's no AD, right?
Well, yes, but like Washington's the better job. And like by all accounts, he had already had the deal done. Like there was no question he was still going to get Washington. Why would you consider taking the worst job just because you don't know who the AD is?
I guess that's fair. Again, 1 year at Utah State, it feels a little quick for me, but...
Well, right. I guess my thing with Sprink...
Right. You were saying with what he did at Montana State, he'd be viable at Washington, which is fair.
But... Agreed. But I think the thing I would say, maybe in the devil's advocate for why he shouldn't be viable, is that, you know, if you thought Nico Medved was better than Sprinkle before this season... which he clearly was, why is Sprinkle now ahead of him? Like, yeah, it was a good coaching job, but Nico got an at-large too. And Colorado State wound up higher than them in KenPom. Like, I don't know. Again, I have no issue with it. I think Sprinkle's a good coach. I think he'll do well there. But I thought it was weird that it was so wired.
We'll see with all these one-year guys, because people are throwing around. I saw Goodman throw out Steve Lutz for SMU. I got Western Kentucky for 1 year.
Like, I think Steve Lutz is the leader at Oklahoma State.
And then we have Amir Abdur-Rahim, who I think is probably the best of the one-year guys.
Yes.
Kind of peripherally a candidate at some of these places, it seems.
It does feel like the one-year guys should be aggressive in trying to get out, especially at jobs like, you know, like what Amir has. Like, South Florida is not a good job, like, in theory. Like,
right.
Trying to assume that you're going to win like 20 more next year and like all of a sudden get Florida State.
Right. I'm saying from the hiring.
Yeah, no, I agree. I knew what you're saying. I was just saying from the coach's perspective.
But now we got to fill James Madison. You got to fill Utah State. Got to fill Drake. I've seen Ben McCollum, the Division II guy for Drake, potentially. I saw Noah Lander today had Kowalczyk from Toledo to Utah State, maybe. And Trilly had a couple guys, you know, kind of usual mid-major guys for James Madison. So,
and there will be some trickle-down from the Schertz, Kelsey, whatever. I mean, Charleston's an elite job. Charleston could pull a sitting head coach. Like,
Are they going to the A-10 next year?
Hasn't been announced yet, but I think it's more likely than not.
What is the A-10 doing? They got to get smaller.
You can't get smaller, though. Not in this day and age.
No one's done it yet.
You can't do it. Doesn't work.
Well, didn't the WAC kick out Chicago State?
Well, that doesn't count.
Big East should kick out DePaul. If Chicago State's not good enough for the WAC, the Big East is not good. Or DePaul's not good enough for the Big East.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Any more carousel thoughts? Do you want to hit the portal quick, or are we good?
I think we could skip the portal until...
Yeah, let's hold on. I do say it's wild to see commits coming across.
Oh, Kyle Smith, Stanford.
I know. I mean, that seems like a logical one, but it is official now. I think a good hire, right? I mean, hard to quibble too much.
Yeah, that's a great hire for Stanford. Then UIC hired the former UAB coach who was fired?
Correct.
What was the rationale?
He has some ties to Chicago, and the AD worked with him at Maryland. It sounded like the list there at the end was A.W. Hamilton and Rob Jones, and all of a sudden Eason stole it. I don't know what it was. I don't think it was that attractive a job because of NIL issues, and they really wanted a head coach. So that was a big deal as well. But I also just think at the end of the day, I'm trying to think of the best way of framing this. Like, Rob Eason's a good coach. He didn't do a terrible job at UAB. He won some games. I think he was like 20 over 500. Kind of got a quick hook for Andy Kennedy. But if UIC was trying to win at a high level, I think it was a hard. I mean, it is a. It feels underwhelming. Is how I'll frame it.
Absolutely.
But we'll see. I mean, I'm rooting for Rob. I think he's a good dude. But.
And then the guys who are stuck, right? The guys who were the mover guys, you know, guys who people tagged as movers that aren't gonna be able to move. So you got Mitch Henderson, Mir Abdur-Rahim. Who else do we have?
Medved, assuming he's not Oklahoma State or like a trickle down.
You see, you got Miko. You have Richard Pitino, right? Was going to get Central Florida, or Drew, Bobby Hurley was going to get Central Florida.
Yeah, Drew Valentine was like a late peg mover because of the A-10 win. So, but I mean, look, I think the carousel might not be dead yet.
And then, I wanted to get your confirmation on this.
Okay.
Did the St. Bonaventure AD really resign because he turned down an NIT bid?
I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. My understanding of the situation was that, like, you know, the fans were already sort of unhappy with the AD, and then he, like, unilaterally declined an NIT bid without asking the players, and that was enough.
Did he ask Mark Schmidt?
Seemingly, yes.
Who knew the NIT was going to cause so much controversy this year?
I mean, everybody's dropping out of it. And then you got everybody's opting out of the CBI. The CIT has 9 teams. Seems like a bizarre amount.
But the NIT was funny because they made that rule where you had to have 2 teams from every power conference.
Yes.
And they could not get a second Pac-12 team in.
Yeah, Oregon State had to officially decline there.
They asked literally every Pac-12 team, and Utah was the only one who said yes. I mean, if you're Wayne Tinkle, how do you not accept and just, you know, win a couple games to get another huge extension?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have won those games, but
NIT, anything could happen. But yeah, probably they lose. But.
Anyway, well, let's wrap it up. Appreciate y'all listening. This was fun. We'll see y'all next week with a Final Four in hand. Crazy stuff. Appreciate y'all.